Of je nou ervaring hebt of niet, samen mediteren is krachtig en mooi. En hoe fijn is het om verschillende smaken te proeven? Kijk, de basis is gewaar zijn van je gedachten. Dat is mediteren, maar dat kan je op verschillende manieren doen. Dat kan je, hè, de oude manier, met mantra's en toestanden, zoals Swami het gaat doen. Of je gaat juist een beetje, nou ja, zoals Merel Teunis en Christine Beijnen van Cosmic Life het gaan doen. Het op de manifestatie manier doen. Wat hebben we nog meer? We hebben de Transcendente Reis van Marieke van Meijeren. We hebben de Oer-Dokzen meditatie. Dat zal vooral een hoop stilte zijn, denk ik. Met Jan Geurts. Mike Upilacic, de man van de Meditations app. Her Meditation Moments, waar hij zelf natuurlijk die fijne stem heeft. Maar ook Faya Laurens, die is erbij. Robert Bridgman. We hebben ademexperts, Koen de Jong en op zijn handpan natuurlijk Casper van der Meulen. Jesse Jazz is erbij, Roy Martina, Hielke Bonnema. Ik ga ze toch echt niet weer allemaal opnoemen. Maar ik nodig je uit om erbij te zijn. Van 1 tot 10 mei, meditatie, helemaal gratis. Geef je op via koekeroe.nl/meditatie. Koekeroe.
All right.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a start. Ja, welkom bij een nieuwe aflevering van Koekeroe. Je hoorde net, dit is een fenomeen. Hij is heel goed in beatboxen. Maar hij is veel meer dan dat, anders zou je natuurlijk niet hier zitten. Yogetsu Akasaka is hier. Hij is van Japan en hij is op de Biohacker Summit, waar ik een paar afleveringen opneem met vele inspirerende mensen. En, well, I love your journey. I love how you combined the passion for music and well, your religion beliefs together. So thanks for doing that. Because, I don't have to explain to yourself that that's why you have a big audience.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So you were, for me it was quite, not that young that you started beatboxing, 22.
Yeah.
And what happened?
Well, just, one day one of my old friends just said to me, hey, listen to this CD, listen to this music. And like, I was, oh, this sounds really cool. And he also told me, hey, he's making this sound only with his mouth. And I was like, wow. That's how I started.
Yeah, and who was it?
Huh?
Who was it? Who was that? The maybe
the guy, the beatbox guy. His name is Afra. He's he's a Japanese
beatbox
pioneer.
Well.
Yeah.
Okay. So you started.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's, well, then you were beatboxing, you were busking around the world, making music, not only with the beatbox, but because that's so nice, you definitely have to check his videos, because you used the loop station and the hand pan. It's, but then in 2015, so you were like 32?
Yeah, when I was 32, yeah.
You became a monk.
Monk.
Why that?
It's because it's like everything is just came from my father. He became a Buddhist monk when he was 50s.
Oh, so you actually grew up with the Buddhism?
I was born and raised in just a general family, but my father like suddenly decided to become a Buddhist monk, when I was in high school.
Oh.
Then he left our home. He went to a monastery.
What do you thought of that? Because you were like maybe you were a bit.
We were like, oh, that's his choice, and
But in a certain way, he was leaving the family then.
Yeah,
that's pretty heavy.
Yeah, at the time, but we were actually kind of expecting that kind of things happens to us.
Yeah?
It's because of, we knew something was going on with him.
Like mental problems or
a mental problem, but just like his interest, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. So.
And then
And then,
yeah.
Well, in Japan, usually Buddhist temples are succeeded by the children.
Mm-hmm.
So my father one day asked me to succeed him. You want to do this job? And I said no.
No. It was when I was you were an artist.
Yeah, when I was in a early 20s. Mm-hmm. So like, I was like, no, I don't want to do this kind of like funeral job, you know, because in Japan, Buddhists basically do funerals and memorial services.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And most people believe Buddhism is something for dead people. You know?
Okay.
We pray for dead people, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's actually not.
No. Okay. Mm-hmm. But let's go back to when you were like 20 something and your father. Well, I think you saw him some of the time, or I don't know how does it work. When did he give some Buddhist inspiration?
Well, he just gave me an opportunity to become a Buddhist monk.
Yeah, that was later. But I mean, what were the lessons he taught you, when you were young? I can imagine when you are like a monk, you want to share it with your children and give you some tools to practice in your daily life when you were
there.
I mean,
my father, he became I became a Buddhist monk just 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And he just offered me to become a Buddhist monk about, well, let's say like 15 years ago.
Yeah, and then
it's been a while to, you know, for me to decide to become a Buddhist monk. But like he didn't tell me anything about like Buddhist teachings.
Okay. So why you thought, okay, now I'm going to do it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's because I was really interested in like life and death. And my purpose of my life, you know, and also purpose of our presence,
yeah,
and our human beings. Why are we here? And what are we supposed to do in this earth?
And what made you think about those big, great questions?
Yeah, it's because of at some point I was kind of depressed in my life.
Okay.
And I was really needed some strong reason
or
motivation to live. And
but for me, it sounds like you were living the life. You were an artist. You were busking. You were beatboxing. But it wasn't that great for you, mental. No.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Yeah. At some point, I had no hope for my life. And I was just no vision in my future, no idea what to do in my life. And like, so I definitely needed some good reason to live, or some good reason, or some good purpose for my entire life. And I started to have interest in life and death, purpose of my life, what is my, true purpose for this lifetime, and that kind of things, you know, what is my favorite things to do, and what is my best job, you know, for myself, and at the same time for others, you know.
Mm-hmm.
How can I contribute my life to others?
And that was the moment he asked the question, and that was like a given, or
yes, exactly. Yeah. And if I become a Buddhist monk, you know, I can just question that kind of question myself forever.
Yeah. Wow. So, of course, it's hard to describe, but can you tell us a bit what you did, what you learned when you became a Buddhist monk? How does it work?
So, in Zen Buddhism.
Yeah.
Especially our school, try to find, like, let's say, ultimate happiness. You know, we call it enlightenment or or whatever. Mm-hmm. But just let's say, let's make it simple, like ultimate happiness, you know, ultimate peace.
Yeah, that's better because
that's
happy.
Better. It's happiness not, is like, yeah,
yeah exactly.
ultimate peace, you know, and it's not something that can that we can gain, you know.
No.
But actually, it's already here. The old process is something like how we can notice that ultimate peace is in our daily life,
mm-hmm.
and how we can experience that kind of feeling or that kind of state of mind or consciousness in our daily life. And what I experienced in my monastic life was while I was doing a daily meditation, and also at the time when I was just trying to dump some garbage. I was pulling some cart,
yeah,
to carry the garbages. And then it was beautiful sunset time. And when I was walking, carrying the garbages to dump to the garbage box, and they just like suddenly just some inspiration came to me, like, oh, it's nothing that I can explain or that I can describe in words, but some inspiration, some feeling,
just,
you know?
Be in the moment,
just being in the moment, yeah. Exactly, and just no reason, but just yeah, like kind of, oh, like everything's like every, like, you know, every piece is in my life, just, you know, the connecting,
it's all good, yeah.
Connecting,
yeah,
together, and then just realizing myself, oh, that's how I'm here, and like everything is perfect, and like I was so honored to be in that place,
yeah.
You know, in that moment. And like, oh, that's how it goes. That's how it. That's how this like old practice is supposed to be.
But how difficult is it? Because you're a human being, so I think you wanted that feeling. Oh, I want that again. I want that again.
Oh yeah.
And then it's not gonna happen.
Yeah, exactly. So Zen practice is all about how you let everything go.
Yeah.
So if you let everything goes, everything comes.
Yeah.
So the
What's the difficult word again? Equilibrity over you know what I mean? I once did a Vipassana and they are, but I only know the Dutch word gelijkmoedigheid, but I don't know the English word anymore, but it's with a Q. Well, it's not to attach,
yeah,
not to good things, not to bad things. It's all good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like without judgment.
Yeah.
So focus on the moment.
Yeah.
Without judgment.
Yeah.
Like everyone's calls it like as mindful practice.
Mm-hmm.
But mindful practice is originally from Buddhist practice.
Exactly.
So
it's a small part,
small
only
part,
only to relax.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But it's also the key to, you know, to realize yourself, or the gateway to,
it's an entrance,
go deeper,
yeah,
and everything.
Yeah.
You know, so
but what happened then? Sorry, I interrupted you. So of course you had that feeling, oh, I want to have that enlightenment moment again.
Well, yeah, but well, I didn't really attach to that experience.
Oh wow.
Because it was not something that I tried to gain.
No.
You know, it just suddenly happened.
Great.
So how can I just, you know,
every morning with every the morning. With the garbage and the sun again.
What is coming again, yeah, you know?
No, of course.
Am I gonna go down for the garbage, you know?
Yeah. And for how long have you been there?
Have I been
as a Buddhist monk?
I've been a Buddhist monk for, let's say, 7, 8 years.
Yeah, But I can imagine that was what I meant, that you were staying there at a place during several years, or
monastery.
Yeah,
I was in the monastery for 2.5 years.
Yeah. Okay. And what were the lessons you learned besides the attached thing? Because I can imagine a lot of feelings came, a lot of.
Yeah. So like everything is actually okay. It was a really good lesson for me. Like, we are always trying to find like some better place. You know, like most of us, like most people think like, hey, this is not my place. Maybe there's some better place for me. And if I go there, there's more like, you know, there must be better people
yeah,
for me.
Yeah.
And you know, then people go there. But the thing is like, when you go somewhere else with that kind of state of mind, you're gonna face kind of like, you know, same problem as before.
Yeah.
Which is something you need to face.
It will never be good enough. It's already good enough.
Yeah. So we first need to focus on what is actually happening to you right now. Then, like, if you try to find some better place mm-hmm. without facing the problem that you have right now, the problem is coming back to you.
But that's a fun thing you say, or it's a great lesson, of course. But we're here now at a biohacking summit, and of course, all those lovely people here are here because they want to be at the better place.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that's what do you think of
Pretty
that?
It's like it's always a good process, like. Because when people want something better, so go to some place to learn something new, and it, especially for spiritual practice, you know, people can come to, you know, those kind of like places to practice to get something better,
mm-hmm.
and even if the reason why people come to those places are very, you know, realistic or whatever. People, there are still some opportunity to experience, like, you know, things I mentioned,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, oh, the most important thing is something beyond our logic or beyond our thinking mind. And it's something that, you know, that we can experience, you know, after let everything go,
mm.
and yeah, so everyone can have some opportunity, and everyone needs some good reason, like, you know, even if it's something like, oh, I wanna gain that, I wanna have that, you know, even if it's that kind of, yeah. It works.
Yeah, because we are like nature, so of course we like to grow.
Yeah.
Yeah. But do you think, I don't know if you are really involved therefore in the more biohacking industry, I will call it, because what I hear from you and a lot of other people here is that, well, it started more like a thing with, okay, taking that supplement, doing that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I love it. It's getting more, well, spiritual.
Yeah. I think, in my point of view, if people are healthier, like physically and mentally,
mm-hmm.
they have a chance to grow their spiritual health as well. So your spiritual growth never happens without your physical health, no. mental health. So your physical health and the mental health is it's kind of fundamental things to grow your spirituality. So biohacking is all about like mental health and also physical health. So more people, the more people interested in biohacking, the more people have more opportunity to for their spiritual growth.
Yeah.
That's my point.
Yeah. But there's, of course, with all good things, also maybe a dangerous thing that people use it as rules and there will be more stress even then. And you know what I mean? Do you understand me?
Like,
yeah, that it's getting like, a doctrine that all the people were so involved. Oh, I don't have to eat this, I have to eat that, and I have to sleep there. And then I think, chill. That's the best thing for you to do, always.
Exactly, yeah. But like, actually, like, let's enjoy this time. Let's enjoy at this moment. Let's chill. It also should be inside of the, you know, like biohacking, like teachings, you know.
Yeah.
It's not always like gaining something. No. Oh, what's the best information? What is the newest information? Hey, let's get chill. Then yeah. It also should be included.
Yeah, exactly. That was
what
I mean.
That's my point.
Yeah. What's your morning routine?
Do you have? Practice meditation.
Yeah. What kind of meditation?
Zen meditation.
Yeah.
I also do Vipassana meditation.
Okay.
And
is that with eyes open?
Yeah.
Or eyes closed?
My Zen meditation is half open.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay.
And I do taking cold showers.
Yeah.
Wim Hof breathing, Wim Hof method.
Yeah. Okay.
That's biohacking, like morning routine as well. Yeah.
And for how long is your meditation?
Nearly 10 years.
No, sorry, I mean during a morning.
I mean during in the morning, like it's not that long, like no. 30 minutes to 45 minutes.
Well, that's quite long, yeah. I guess. I think. But okay, great.
Yeah.
And during the day, are there some other rituals, routines, meditations?
Other during the day,
yeah.
I do chanting.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So chanting is also a good practice for
not only on stage.
Not only stage.
No,
yeah.
No. Okay.
This chanting is also mindful practice.
Yeah.
You know? The chanting when you're chanting, you can just focus on the sounds you make, you know, through your vocal cord.
Yeah.
That can resonate yourself easily. And so chanting is also good practice for mindful practice.
Yeah. And I don't know how does that work. Is it like you're singing like songs or texts you already know? Or is it just intuition making sounds?
Mm-hmm.
How does it work, chanting?
Well, how does my music work? Do you like?
Yeah, it's more like is it do you have like a text in your head or is it just making the noise?
Just making the noise. Yes, just making the sounds.
Yeah.
Like I always spontaneously create my music.
Yeah.
So without thinking, so the chanting is like something that I can like I can sing or I can do without thinking, you know?
Yeah.
Even though chanting is also, you know, is in words. But I don't need to think anything about it. I just chant. I make sounds, and I create my music spontaneously. So my intuition does everything.
Yeah.
And that really affects people. That my state of consciousness, that create the whole atmosphere.
That brings us to a big question I always ask, and it's a weird question maybe, but how do you train your intuition?
Ooh. Just keep following your intuition and keep just try to focus on what you're feeling in your side. you know, what you inner self is saying, or even, you know, anything you are resisting,
mm-hmm.
anything you don't really want to face, like any kind of negative emotion, just notice like anything that you have in yourself.
But how do you know that it's your pure inner self and not an ego thing?
Yeah. So any kind of sensation is some sensation is really powerful, but some sensation is really subtle, you know? And maybe your true voice is, some of them are really subtle.
Whispering.
But in your daily life, the more you focus on yourself, the more you are sensitive to what you're feeling about yourself, you can notice, there was some point that like just knocking you, you know? Here's what you want. Maybe here's some like, you know, good idea for you. Just try to focus on that kind of sensation.
Yeah, you have a podcast yourself, a great podcast, Zen Life. And there was this episode where you were talking for those who have no idea what to do. And well, this is just the answer you were just saying. Listen to yourself. Yeah. What is the use of the ego, do you think?
Ooh.
Is there a use? And
yes, ego sometimes, you know, quite useful, because ego is actually, it's driven by your desire,
mm-hmm.
and also ego drives you your desire. Vice versa.
Yeah.
And if your intention is higher, your ego, you know, will work in a good way. You know, maybe you're gonna think, how can I contribute more, to others?
Yeah.
How can I get, like, how can I leverage myself, you know, better than before to contribute others, you know? If the intention is the important thing.
Oh, but that's, I love that you say so, you get so, because I was thinking that a Buddhist monk would, is to get rid of the ego.
Yeah, actually, that's like the, most people misunderstand the, getting like enlightenment, maybe get rid of ego or everything,
mm-hmm.
but without ego, how can we survive? Without desire, how can we survive? You know, we always have desire to eat. We always have desire to sleep and having sex, have children. How can we survive in this world without having children? You know, but like, yeah. So like, just like I said at the conference, to be a good friend to your ego, and is actually just notice
mm-hmm.
that you have your own ego.
Yeah.
And
you don't have to follow it always, but
yeah,
just listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Well, talking about that thing, you mentioned it. How does it work with the sexual drive?
Whew. Just noticing, how can it work for the sexual life?
Yeah, or how do you do it in your daily life? I don't know how. Does a Buddhist monk have sex?
In Japan, all Buddhist monks can get married, because that's how we maintain our temples.
Yeah,
we are children, so the Buddhist children need to succeed the temples. So that's like how.
Your father. That's not a thing. Okay. And I don't know, you probably heard about this, and I think it's very interesting to use the life or sexual energy, how you call it, to do even more good things. Are you practicing with that?
Yeah. I don't specially practice for that kind of purpose.
No.
But I just naturally, what in my experience, if you have higher intention, and if you're like a spiritual purpose, if you have like higher intention, yeah, mm-hmm. like it's going to be like your energy is going to like transcend to do something like for that purpose. So, well, what I think is I think I've been using like pretty much that kind of energy into creating my music and like sharing the energy or vibes
yeah,
to others.
Yeah, and that's what it is, creation.
Yeah.
Of course. I ask you, like all the guests, what three books have influenced you on your journey?
Yes.
The most powerful
well,
for you?
Well, first of all, Power of Now by
the
Eckhart
Power of
Tolle.
Now, Eckhart Tolle, okay. And where in your life was the moment you...
Yeah. It was like I met that book when I was in London when I was in it was I was like you know, when I was a student
yeah,
in
yeah,
London
okay.
like I was kind of like really depressed by some situation
yeah
and I met the book and I was like it just I didn't actually understand exactly what it was talking about because it's just like. Totally different things, you know, like, but I, like, my intention, my intuition or like, or whatever, like, it was saying this is something really important, like,
exactly.
This is something that can change my life. And then, like, that's my point, like, that was the first opportunity for me to know what is the like you know the focusing in the moment or like experience the feeling experience the
I am not my the, thoughts
yeah emotion and everything
yeah.
rather than thinking
yeah
you know?
Exactly okay great the second one
is the beginner's mind Zen mind beginner's mind by Shunryu Suzuki. He's also a pioneer of American Zen.
Mm-hmm. And what's the essence of that book?
Like how we can experience our daily life as a beginner.
Mm-hmm.
So beginner's mind is always like fresh, you know? You don't know anything about it. So you just go to some new place with your fresh mind to try to experience something new. And if you live like that way in your daily life, everything's gonna be like fresh. Everything's gonna be like really mindful.
Yeah. And but how do you do? Because it sounds great, and like a virgin thing. But yeah. You cannot fool yourself when you have experiences, of course.
Yeah.
So. I'm definitely going to read this book, but can you give us a small hint how to stay in that open, fresh mind?
Yeah. So it's all about mindful practice
mm-hmm.
that can actually start with focusing on your breath.
Yeah.
Or counting your breath. If you count your breath, you have to be mindful. You have to think about others, think anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So like just counting your breath, or you can just simply focus on your breath.
Yeah.
Hmm. That can lead you to some mindful state.
Yeah. I'm thinking now, it's great that you were involved with the whole beatboxing thing because, I don't know, but I think it has to do something with breathing as well.
Yeah. So beatboxing is also the mindful practice. For
yeah.
me,
yeah.
Like if I really truly focus on the sounds I make with my mouth, like I really I should be really sensitive to what is actually going on in my mouth. the really sensitive touch and sensitive, like, everything, you know? How, like, every part of my mouth, like, vibrating, you know, some part of my, you know, some other parts. And
great.
Yeah. So it's going to be a mindful practice.
Yeah, actually. Yeah. And the third book.
Third book is Happy Money by Ken Honda. He's one of the bestsellers in not only in Japan but also in the world.
Mm-hmm.
He's been talking about the how we can have a good relationship with money, because like money is something we have, you know, good emotion and also bad emotion. Mm-hmm. You know, so how we can have a good relationship with it, and this is really connecting to our whole life.
Yeah, but thanks for this great tip, because I'm going to read this book, I think, because yeah, money, it's a strange thing, don't you think?
Money is also one of the biggest things we have, like, we have, you know, strong emotion,
mm-hmm.
negative or positive.
Yeah,
you know, so we have like money is
it's so infected.
Bigger things we really affects on our life.
Yeah.
You know, with strong attachment. You know, so it's really it also means it's a really good key, a really good focus for our practice. You know, so we can. Because we can easily experience negative emotion or positive emotion through money.
Yeah. So that's great. So you say you cannot say, oh, it doesn't matter to me.
No. Like most people believe, oh, like forget about money. I don't want to think about money. No. If you can live without money, it's good. Like if you... Like let's say, you know, Theravada Buddhism monastery.
Mm-hmm.
If you live in there, you're never gonna think about money or anything.
No.
But if you live in Mahayana Buddhism, of course in Japanese Buddhism, we always have to live with money. So we all have to think about money.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise we can't live. So like money is, but like if we say, No, we don't have any attachment. We don't think about money because money is like bad thing. Money always makes some problem. If you escape to that kind of idea, we never have opportunity to face that kind of really. So any kind of feeling, any kind of emotion that tells you what is important, what is actually, you know, things you need to face.
Oh, sorry, ik onderbreek eventjes dit fijne gesprek. Maar dat is vanwege iets dat met boeken te maken heeft. En ja, ik hou van boeken. Ik hou van verhalen. Van lezen, maar ook van luisteren. Voor als je onderweg bent of gewoon, weet ik veel wat aan het doen bent. En ik heb nu iets tof met de vrienden van Next Story. Daar vind je echt op die site, jongen, 300.000 boeken. Dus ook zeker de boeken die net besproken zijn. En ik mag je nu, en dat is echt wel een toffe actie, 50 dagen gratis aanbieden. Ja, die gasten die geloven gewoon wel in zichzelf. Dus die denken, oké, dan hebben we ze. Maar dat kan je echt even checken. Ga naar koekeroe.nl/boekenkast. Daar vind je sowieso alle boeken die besproken zijn in de afgelopen afleveringen. En daar vind je dus ook een link. En via die link kan je 50 dagen gratis Next Story gebruiken. Check het. koekeroe.nl/boekenkast.
But, well, you are... Yeah, like I said in the beginning, you combined the passion for music and the religious beliefs. And for me, I'm thinking now about my own life. For me, the radio is my passion, is great, and that's that's the job with money.
Mm-hmm.
But I had this thing with Kukuru, this podcast. It started as it's my own path and my own journey I'd like to inspire people with. But in the beginning, I thought, okay, no money involved with that, because this is such a pure thing. It's only about giving. But then, one of my guests came and he said, no, you are not giving it the energy the money, which is also a kind of energy, to make it big, and you want to inspire a lot of people. So that's, I'm really into what kind of a transition right now, and I can imagine, maybe that's why you meant the book, that in what you are doing, helping people, it's so, yeah, for me it's so difficult to ask money for that.
Your point is like, it's hard to ask money to like helping others, for like helping others.
Yeah.
Well, like, you don't need to ask money for like helping others, but like, just money is just like the way of exchange your energy, right?
Yeah.
So like, you don't need to ask money for helping others, but at the same time, you can ask money just as an exchange, you know, your energy.
Yeah.
Your investment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, I'm working on that, and of course, it's the best way to combine those things. And of course, this podcast is for free, but other people can have a commercial before this podcast or whatever. Yeah.
Mm.
Happy money.
Happy money.
Yeah. Thank you for this. this is great. Do you eat meat?
Yes.
Yeah.
So in Japanese Buddhism.
Yeah.
Well, it's a long history, but one time, at some point, Japanese government said like, Buddhist monks can eat meat, can get married. Then you guys maintain the temples. You guys is just, you know, succeed your temples to, you know, buy your children. And that's what it happened in Japanese Buddhism about like 150 years ago. So like, basically all Japanese Buddhist monks, after leaving the monastery, in a monastery, you know, we don't have any, like, you know, we're vegetarians.
Mm-hmm.
But like, after leaving monastery, we live in a normal life.
Mm-hmm.
Most Japanese Buddhist monks live in a normal life,
yeah,
even though we live in the temples. But we get married and we live in a very normal life.
Yeah.
But for me, like, I usually cook by myself, but I don't buy meat. I don't cook meat.
No.
So basically I eat like a vegetarian, but I can just accept everything. Like when people offer like meats or fish or anything, like, you know, I don't want to just avoid. I don't want to say, no, I'm not going to take it.
No. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's great. Because yeah, I here at the summit, and I met some people, and because of the nutrients, a lot of people are, almost against the vegan lifestyle because it's not good for your health. And I'm switching a bit between, well, the nutrients and the more, spiritual energy thing that, well, those animals died not in a good way and now I'm eating it, so... You understand my problem a bit?
Yeah. So like, the problem is like, we all actually try to judge everything like black or white.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
So everything is not like black and white.
No.
But like everything, it's like more like, you know, we tend to like, you know, try to find the one right answer, you know? This is good or this is bad.
Yeah. And that's not how it works.
That causes a problem.
Great. Talking about your podcast, Zen Life, there was this episode, and I would like to talk about this because in another podcast I just recorded it here. I was really honest about a thing. How do I explain it good? So this was with Anna, you know her? The sexual
love?
Yeah. And we were talking about the zone. I want to talk about the Mula Bandha.
Mula Bandha, yeah.
Yeah, because for me, that's like yeah, a zone where I am, well, not really afraid, but I shrink and I freeze. And what's the power of the Mula Bandha? Can you explain that?
Ooh, I am actually...
Can you first explain what it is?
Like, well, Mula Bandha is not actually a Buddhist practice, but I personally practice that Mula Bandha. It's because, well, your muscle and your anus,
yeah,
is actually the, well, in my understanding, it's also muscle of your life. So what I heard is like, when you die, the first muscle is not going to work, is your anus muscle. Mm-hmm. So you, everything you have in intestinal, it just comes out.
Yeah.
You know, that muscle is the key for your life and also for your vitality.
And maybe it's that reason why I'm so tight and so... But yeah. explain more.
I usually do Mula Bandha when I get tired, or when I feel sleepy. You know, when I'm driving, I sleep. If I feel sleepy, I do Mula Bandha to wake me up.
Yeah.
And also like even when I'm chanting, doing Mula Bandha, it gives you like some more energy.
Yeah. So and the basic practice is to
shrink your anus.
Yeah.
Then just repeat.
Yeah.
Shrink and unshrink, and also keep shrinking.
Yeah.
And also like I shrink at the same time I'm breathing, that and imagining that your energy comes from your root to the head, top of your head.
But for me, it's more the challenge to relax that muscle.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but I know it's not your job, but I'm just interested in it. And like I said, I just talked about this with Anna. So maybe you have an advice how to not. It's a combination of shrinking, relaxing. Shrinking, is that a good?
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you relax? That.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I've never thought about it because like relaxing is more like relaxing.
That's
is the, easier. The,
yeah,
than
that's
the
a
shrinking.
Normal state. Yeah, I know, yeah. But
yeah, just relaxing. Just relax it. Yeah. Just let it go. Just like. Ooh.
Yeah.
It's really hard to explain in words, but just.
No, but it's well, like when you're talking, I was just doing it. And I already felt a bit of lighter feeling.
Yeah.
Mula Bandha.
Mula Bandha.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. Do you have an evening routine?
Evening tea?
An evening routine.
Evening routine?
Yeah.
Yeah, I practice more meditation. And evening routine... I try to relax more.
Mm-hmm.
And I change the light, my room light, to like from white light to like more like warm, like orange light.
You are a biohacker.
Yeah, that's what I do.
When I'm talking to you now, you sounds for me like a really inspirational guy. But in what area of life is still work to do for you? In other words, what's your biggest weakness, if you have?
Biggest weakness?
Weakness, yeah. What for you is like still a challenge?
Oh, yeah. Like I said, like, you know, about happy money. How I can have like a good relationship with money, you know?
Oh, you're still learning that as well.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm still learning everything.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah, of course. But
it's like, you know, when people see some Buddhist monks, oh, he must be someone like some totally enlightened one.
Yeah.
And like
yeah.
Some people like, you know, talk to me like that. But like, oh no, it's the first thing I said, no, I'm not like, I'm a, like a normal person like you guys, you know? But maybe I'm, you know, I know a little bit more about like, about practice, about how we can control ourselves, about the process, you know, our mental process, and like some more experience, you know, how to get healed and that kind of thing.
More aware of feelings or whatever. Mm. Yeah. Okay, and do you have goals, ambitions? Because maybe you want to work with big artists and make a song, or I don't know. Yeah.
Yes. So my intention to my music is like to like bring higher frequencies or higher, like, you know, intention to leave.
Yeah.
You know, to others.
Yeah.
So if the more people, you know about music, the more people are hopefully will be like realize, you know, what they really need to do or want to do or the true purpose of their life or whatever.
Yeah. But so, it would be great. That's my opinion. If you are making a Heart Sutra with, well, name any really famous American artist, that would be so inspirational. Yeah.
I hope that will happen too.
If you can choose now, and you can pick any artist.
Why not?
Yeah. Who would you like to pick?
Oh, I just thought like Björk.
Björk.
Yeah. Oh. In Europe. Yeah. Yeah, she's from Europe, so like, yeah, maybe we can have an
Björk. Wow.
She's not American, but like.
No, that's great.
I mean. Yeah, Björk would be the good one, because like I think she can, she can sing like a, you know, improvise singing, which is like,
Well, it's out now. There, it's going to happen, man.
Yeah.
Wow, great, and a very personal question because I'm going to Japan. With my girlfriend, I'm going to travel a lot. I stopped with the radio for a year, and this podcast is going on. But do you have any suggestions in my inner journey that will say, okay, when you are in Japan, definitely go to that place or do that or?
Wow. It depends on the place you visit, but Japan, you can visit some traditional Japanese temples, like, well, you can do this. Eiheiji is our like head temple.
Is that the one in Kyoto or?
It's in the Fukui Prefecture, west, northwest of Japan.
Okay, yeah.
And Eiheiji is one of the beautiful, most beautiful temples in Zen temples in Japan, and Kenchoji is also one of the oldest Zen temples in Japan.
Yeah,
it's in Kamakura. It's kind of close to Tokyo.
Okay.
So if you visit Tokyo, you can also
Kenchoji. Yeah, I heard about it. It's like a beautiful park.
Beautiful park, yeah.
And more because. It's, I don't want to be rude, and I love temples, of course, but reframe the question again. What's the most beautiful part of Japan, like more pure nature?
You just go to countryside with local people.
yeah, but that sounds really general. Do you have like a specific village or
specific like place?
Yeah.
Let's say if you go to Tokyo, you can come to Mitake-san.
Okay.
It's the very west side of Tokyo.
Okay.
It doesn't like feel like in Tokyo, but still in Tokyo. It's very like, you know, nature.
Okay.
Very spiritual.
Okay then. Okay. Yeah. Okay. This is a great one. Mitake-san.
Mitake-san.
Okay, I'm going to send you a picture when I'm there. you were talking about the fact that you're busy with the big questions. What is our purpose? And what is death and life? What do you think of death now? What's your feeling with it?
What I think of?
Of death.
Death? Oh, yeah. I don't.
Are you afraid of it?
Not at all.
Not at all.
Not at all. Like, I'm kind of like, you know, I'm kind of looking forward, but...
Curious.
Yeah, I'm really curious.
Yeah.
And, but it just, the best death only, like, in my idea, the best death only happens when I, after I just, you know, complete my mission to this life, to this, you know, my work in this lifetime. And
do you have children?
I don't have children.
No. Do you want to have children?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. Oh. Because then you can say to your son when he's like 20 and now he and when he's 30 you say okay. I will go to the okay. But what do you think, and we don't know, but I always love to talk about this. What do you think what will happen
after death?
Yeah.
Whew. We go to some beautiful place that you can't describe in words, but it only happens when you die peacefully.
Okay.
So the how you die is also very important.
Yeah, okay.
So if you die peacefully, you can just start from very, you know, peaceful stage. But if you die with suffering and like, or maybe, you know, so much attachment, maybe just you're gonna start with that kind from that kind of stage.
Yeah.
So the consciousness you
and then
have,
you're gonna start again and learn it again, or what do you believe?
Yeah, or just imagine that you know, the feeling. Close your eyes, then you feel the emotion, right? Then when you really have a good emotion, you feel just good. And you just imagine that you start your new world with a bad emotion. How are you gonna feel like? So your state of mind or your state of consciousness when you die is like, it's really important, I think. And so you need to
But then again, it's really when you believe this, then it's really almost like an urge to live good, to stay in peace during. But is that possible?
I think so. The more you let everything go, the more you know you have opportunity to live in peace.
Yeah,
and the less you have things, you know, that triggers you negative emotions, the more you have time, you know, peacefully.
Yeah.
So it's you have more time to practice, like, you know, to notice yourself, to understand yourself. The less problem you have.
Yeah, so you say peaceful is like a muscle, you can train it.
Oh yes. Peaceful muscle, yes.
Yeah. And besides meditation, do you have a tip to train?
Yeah. Just try to find your passion.
Yeah.
Your passion is on some answer, you know, for your life. And just try to focus on your passion. Just try to find what you really want to do in your life, and combine your passion and your higher intention.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so easy, but it's not easy.
Yes, it took time for me as well. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But you found it. How do you want to be remembered? How do you want to be remembered at a certain point? And we're talking about death. You get to Akasaka as sitting here, isn't there anymore? So people are going to talk about you and say, "Oh, yeah, you get to." What would you like that they are say about you?
Ooh. He was the most inspirational person for my life in terms of music and spiritual tradition or ancient wisdom. Combining ancient wisdom and modern technology, that kind of things.
Nice.
Oh, that's a good question, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I love your honest answer, and of course, but you explained that before. Of course, people will say, "Oh, wow, that's an ego thing."
Yeah.
No, it's a drive. Yeah, well, it is actually, but it's a good drive to inspire people.
Yes. So you can use the ego. You can just, you know, take advantage of it.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, man.
You're
for
welcome.
This talk. Maybe you can do the end tune as well.
Maybe I can
do make an end tune.
Make an end tune.
And like how we started.
Yeah. This is the end of my interview.
Dit was Koekeroe. Bedankt voor het luisteren en tot de volgende. I'm really distracted about all those noises that came out of your mouth. It's beautiful. Thanks again.
Thank you.
En jij bedankt voor het luisteren. Vergeet hem ook niet te delen. Ik ben benieuwd wat je van deze vond. Net even wat anders dan andere. Laat iets onder in de reacties. En dat kan tegenwoordig ook bij Spotify. Of je mailt gewoon giel@koekeroe.nl. Dit was hem. Tot de volgende. Zonnegroet. Hoi. Ja, misschien word je helemaal gek van me. Sorry. Maar ik wil gewoon even zeker weten dat je je al hebt aangemeld. Want het zou zonde zijn als je het mist. Samen mediteren. Elke ochtend, elke avond. Live is gratis. En het zijn echt grote coaches die normaal gesproken, nou ja, echt wel wat knaken kosten. Als ik denk aan Michael Pilacic, of Jan Geurs, of Jazzy Jazz, of Faya Laurens, of Robert Bridgman, Swami, Roy Martina, Hielke Bonnema, Merel Teunis. Er zijn nogal wat Marjoleinen, Marjolein Berendsen, Marjolein van der Aar van Mindful Minute, Marjolein Lodrichs, Willem Glaudemans, Jeroen Berends van BeMind, Wouter de Jong van Mind Gym, Marieke van Meijeren van de Bewustzijnsschool natuurlijk, Christine Bijn de Cosmic Life, onze hypnosekoning Edwin Selij, de lichtwerker Tijn Tauber en de Breathwork Master Casper van der Meulen. Ik noem er maar een paar, maar je hoort al, poeh, dit is krachtig. En sowieso, samen, elke ochtend, elke avond, even mediteren. Ja, dat wordt echt een training en een mooi moment, denk ik. Meld je aan via koekeroe.nl/meditatie. Dus koekeroe.nl/meditatie.